Let's catch up.
An NFL podcast with Taylor Bisciotti
and Sam Batesh,
where we talk about the biggest headlines in the NFL.
So, Taylor, you know what? Let's catch up.
It's been too long.
Yeah, we really should.
Blue Wire.
Taylor, let's catch up. And look, I don't enjoy assigning blame in these situations because that's not important. That's not what we do. The important thing is that we're here now. That's the most important thing. All right. Look, we're here every week. We'd like to be here every week talking to each other.
I'm okay with you assigning the blame. It was 100% my fault. I was at a hair appointment. I got stressed. I took it out on Sam. And then, of course, there was no podcast last week.
Look,
my fault. Okay. I apologize.
There's an extra week in the season for this reason, Taylor. This is why we've got another game in the regular season. All right. We play through.
It was for the hair appointment.
And all that matters is the next week, right?
And now you have a get out of jail free card.
That's it. I'm keeping that in the back pocket. But in regards to assigning blame as well, it's my fault that we didn't hop on right after what we could still say perhaps is the game of the week this particular week in the NFL, because Chiefs and Chargers in LA, Taylor, which you were all over on Thursday night, there was a lot I wanted to say that night, and I know there was a lot that you wanted to say. You know, the dust isn't completely settled on the week, but man, did that Chargers and Chiefs game have a lot of implications there, and you were up close and personal at that one.
It did. It lived up to the hype, that's for sure. It's interesting, though, because the Chargers ended up, in a way, losing the game the same way that they had won it week three, which was going for it on fourth down. And you know, so while everybody's sitting there, you know, upset by Staley's decision to go for it on fourth down, I think that the more important and the bigger message is that they wouldn't be in that position or that situation had they not gone for it in week three against the Chiefs, in week four against the Raiders, and week five against the Browns. All of those had fourth down situations where they ended up going for it, and which set them up for a game-winning drive, especially in the game against the Raiders.
And even then, you would say over the course of a season, going for it on fourth down is not about converting every time. It's about converting more often than you don't. And it's about the position that you're going to make up in that position. When you make that decision, are you in a better spot field position-wise than you would be with the punt?
And mathematically, you are. And that's why I think that he's such a firm and avid believer of it.
And again, I just want to say one thing because it really burned me. And in the moment, I knew it. I could feel it. I knew those 4 points and maybe 7 points. Jared Cook on second down.
The first one was Donald Parham.
Yes.
And he ended up getting knocked unconscious. So that should have been a completion.
Even the Jared Cook play, which we're calling the Jared Cook play, admittedly, Herbert would say he'd want that ball back, right? I mean, it wasn't perfect.
Perfect throw.
I mean, certainly Cook is tall enough to go up and get that ball, which he did, and then hits off the shoulder pad. But you can just feel, especially against Kansas City, which is that extra pressure to score, even though they're not the highest scoring team in the league at the moment. But there's that pressure. We're going to have to – we don't want
to score touchdowns and not field goals in order to beat them.
And that was
If you think about it, Derwin James only played 26 of the snaps. And when he was in the game, they held Kelsey to only one catch for 14 yards. And then Derwin, obviously that hamstring injury flared up and they took him out of the game. And that's when Travis Kelsey had over 100 yards, 177
well
yards and two touchdowns.
Well over 100. I was going to say, did we hear from Kelsey anymore after that?
Once Derwin was out of the game, then you heard from Kelsey. But up until he left the game, he'd only had one completed pass for 14 yards.
It's just remarkable to look at the AFC and to look at what could have happened. And even to look back at things that you and I said before the season started in regards to the Chargers. I mean, let's remember for purposes of those listening to Let's Catch Up. Taylor, you have the Chargers as the representative for the AFC in the Super Bowl. This is, again, preseason. And I was bold enough to say that the Chargers were going to win the AFC West. Can we both admit that that game, that moment, up a touchdown with under 2 minutes to go, stopping the Chiefs there changes the season? Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes everything out. I mean, anything that was a mistake by the Chargers to that point, the ugly game against the Ravens, the inexplicable performance in Denver, you can just eliminate, you can almost just wipe out all of that if you're able to find a way, either, of course, to win in regulation or...
I will say the silver lining here for the Chargers is that they have been better on the road. So if you're thinking about it from that, like maybe they feel like they perform better just being like road warriors and kind of going into places and environments and cities where they aren't expected to win. And they all of a sudden outperform and do better than what everybody was thinking was going to happen, because that's what they've done so far this year.
They are such a different team. I don't even quite understand it. And it's not so much, it's not necessarily that I notice or that we notice that they're better on the road. It's that we notice that there's just something at home that seems to, are they just snake bit at home? Like what, because I don't necessarily see them performing so different. It's just that I see the outcomes so questionable at home.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it used to be that the crowds were overrun by the visiting team. And I know there is still some of it. And of course you're there and you're seeing, sort of the percentages in the crowd, but I still feel like LA.
No, I mean, LA is definitely, there's so many more Chargers fans than ever before since I've been covering them. And you're seeing a significant, just like, they're having to quiet the stadium at points where you never really saw that before because there are so many Chargers fans. And so I feel like that is a little bit kind of like of an old storyline, which people just continuously drag over, because at this point, I think that the team has proven to be good enough that they've garnered quite a big avid fan base, especially when you have a young quarterback like Justin Herbert.
For sure. And Herbert's such a superstar that at this point, you got to be able to get behind him. So it's just, look, what stuck out to me, I mean, obviously the Kelce performance is.
And I think that if Derwin James was healthy, they would have won that game.
It's, you know what? I think you perfectly put a bow on it. Let's just say that the game completely changed on that.
The second that Derwin left the game.
Yeah. I mean, to me,
because it opens
up
Travis Kelce,
you're right.
Arguably their most dynamic offensive player.
I think you're right. I mean, I think from a tactical standpoint, you hit it on the head. Me more from an emotional standpoint, it's losing the fourth down play and the Cook second down. But frankly, they also stopped the Chiefs later in the game on fourth down. So you could argue
that
my point is out, because emotionally they got just as many stops. They were able to turn over the Chiefs. It was fairly equal there in regards to both teams kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And that's that, you could just say that that's out. But if you really,
and really their best defensive player and their best offensive player were not in that game 100%. Austin Ekeler, their leading rusher. I mean, I think he leads the team in so many statistical categories, but he was partially there, didn't take a full workload of snaps. And then Rashawn Slater was also out. So really a couple of their best offensive playmakers were either not in the game or not at 100%.
Not 100%. And again, the Derwin thing is just a perfect one. All right. So look, that's for Thursday. We'll put a bow on it. Taylor was out there all night. I mean, frankly, that felt like a playoff game. Obviously, coming down to the wire the way it did, but just, you could tell both teams knew. I mean, look, going into that game, the winner of that game was going to lead the AFC West. And it looked every bit like what we had said at the beginning of the season, that this division was going to come down to those two teams. I saw it as finally, the Chargers sort of getting over. And you had that great stat going in, which is that if Herbert was able to find a way to beat Mahomes for the second time in a season, he'd be the only guy next to Tom Brady to have done that. And the first ever to do it in the regular season. I mean, obviously, you've got to be a divisional guy to even have that opportunity. But that would have been something early in his career.
Yeah.
To know. And again, look, even so, to have the game, to have played toe to toe with Mahomes that way is still something he can hang his hat on. And Herbert will still have something to say the rest of the season. But we're going to move on from that game as hard as it is. And it was a tremendous battle back and forth. But we have
both teams are still very much in that. So,
they're 100%.
As tough of a loss as it was, and as tough as we thought that, the division definitely came down to that. I still think that there's a lot of football left for both those two teams, obviously.
Well, plenty left to be said. And like we said earlier, again, an extra game this season for to really see how the dust is going to settle. We have to talk about Baltimore. And here's why. Just 4 points is the difference between three wins and 3 losses for the Ravens over the course of the last 3 weeks. 4 mm-hmm. total points. And that doesn't just happen. You don't lose games consistently in this league back-to-back weeks by a point, by 2 points, by a point. And the decision, Taylor, again, it feels like deja vu for you and I to be talking about a 2-point conversion yeah. and the Ravens at the end of a game.
This just happened 2 weeks ago.
But we were certainly...
But I will say this situation is a little bit different because, one, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and question John's, you know, play calling and decision to go for it. I think that the bigger storyline here is that the Ravens, without both corners, without their starting quarterback, with more players on injured reserve and more starters on injured reserve than any other team in the football, in the National Football League right now, that they were able to go head to head and almost beat arguably the best team in the NFC.
And
I think that's
the
bigger storyline. I think that you've got coach of the year right there, potentially. It's somebody that's made chicken salad out of nothing. I think Tyler Huntley had a heck of a game. I think that we've seen guys that have come up from the practice squad that have gone in there to have to start this game, and they almost literally beat the best team in football right now.
Incredible performance. And Huntley, particularly in a game that they're trailing by 2 touchdowns, that looks like it's very much just wrapped up by Green Bay. Even to get the ball back was impressive, and to drive the field the way that they did, the rushing touchdown to tie it. And then even loved the decision before the 2-point try, trying to draw Green Bay offsides, was also interesting. I just didn't know if there perhaps the theory was, let's try to draw this so it is a 1-yard 2-point conversion and then make the kick, as opposed to not getting them to jump and then still going for the 2. I really loved the philosophy of, if we can get it to 1 yard, we're going for the 2. I just thought the other part of that should have been, and if we don't get them to jump, now we're making the kick because of what had happened 2 weeks ago. You know how I feel about these things. I because of the coin flip, I still overall love the decision of going for the 2-point conversion, because there's the possibility, if you don't go for the win right there, that you never see the ball. There's that
where
possibility.
Where I was really questioning it, though, is that there were still going to be points left on the clock.
Yeah, there was still time for Rodgers to come down and win that game.
Still seconds left on the clock.
Even if you're up, right. Even if you're up a point, Rodgers still beat you with a field goal with
40 seconds.
42 seconds there. So Rodgers is still going to have time to come down the field and potentially set up for a Crosby game-winning field goal. I still like the boldness of it. I still like that you're considering in that moment, you know, what if we tie it? And frankly, even more so than the one in Pittsburgh with no time, because now you know you're giving Rodgers the ball with a chance. So, you know, again, if you're tied now, you know that you're giving Rodgers the ball with a chance to win it yet again. So it's such a, what I don't like, and this is in any situation, I don't love the rollout.
If it would have been pulled off, he would have been the smartest coach. And
yes,
then if it doesn't, then everybody's coming for, you know, he's the worst coach in football.
True. It's tough when you chop the field in half, though, right? The rollout is tough there, because it's just always
Tyler Huntley is put them in this situation.
The window's smaller. That's it. The window is just smaller. And you'd love to see Huntley there with a decision, you know, that potentially he can run one in or pass it there. And of course, going to Andrews is fine. Look at the game that Andrews had. There's nothing wrong with designing it for Andrews. Andrews nearly won it against Pittsburgh with a very well-designed 2-point conversion. You could argue was just inches off, whether you want to call it inches from Andrews being able to grab it or inches on the Lamar throw. This one was not quite there in the end, but what a performance. I love this decision of the 2 points, and I love the argument of it, because again, it just brings up for me how much I hate the coin flip. I just don't understand the philosophy in such a precise game. I just, the coin flip is just like, why are we going to this schoolyard game in the middle of this very professional battle that's happened all day? It stinks. It's awful.
It's a tough way to lose, especially back to back.
I just wish for overtime you knew which team was going to get the ball heading into it. I wish you knew, okay, home team always gets the ball, or road team always gets the ball first. I just wish that was something. And so, whatever. Regardless, Harbaugh is bold. That's part of it. And you talked about it. Staley is bold, and that's part of it. You know, either going for it, fourth down.
They're both coaches that have really bought into that mathematical and analytics philosophy.
And it's and the smart coaches win that way. So that's all. All right. So we'll put a pin in that very quickly. And obviously we've talked a lot about the AFC, but the NFC, something really fascinating just happened. And I'm not sure if I hadn't watched it on Sunday night, I'm not sure if I told you this ahead of time, you ever would have believed it, that minus Sean Payton, and at this point, we know obviously minus Jameis Winston, but the fact that I don't know that we would have had 9-0 as the final score for Saints and Bucks, considering the Bucks are the highest scoring offense in the league. What did we just see on Sunday night, Taylor?
A defensive, a dominating defensive performance from the Saints, who just got all over Brady. And for once, he didn't get the calls. Kidding.
He did. There were a lot of calls. He was frustrated. I mean, look, throwing the tablet around, yelling at the Saints sideline, yelling at referees at numerous points. I felt he did a good job of actually containing his frustration against teammates on the field. He's always very cognizant of that, and I thought he did a very good job of that. But the frustration everywhere else.
I don't understand exactly what the Saints are able to do to Tom Brady, though, more so than any other team.
0-4 regular season as Bucs starting quarterback against the Saints. Of course, he got over.
Tom Brady was shut out for the first time in 15 years.
Think about that.
15 years.
2006. I knew the Saints were going to keep this game close. We knew that the Saints, obviously, they had given Tom Brady the worst loss of his, I believe it's still the worst loss of his career, 38-3 last season. But it's just one of those where you did not see that happening. No team leading the NFL in points has been shut out at home in December or January, ever.
And the Saints have had his number.
Yeah, since 1970, no team leading the league offensively has been shut out in December or January. And the Saints just need to have it. And by the way, Cam Jordan, what a renaissance game for him. I mean, just to go back in time, and of course, I mean, the forced fumble, but beyond that, just everywhere on the field, it seemed every time Brady was frustrated, Cam Jordan was right there, or Malcolm Jenkins, who also had a good game. Yes, a couple of maybe calls here and there against Gronk, but Jenkins was a huge difference in that game as well. And it was just something we didn't expect to see. And now, Taylor, you know, in many ways, you had talked about this. You had texted me earlier about the Lions. You know, what the Lions were able to do to the Cardinals. And of course, not that we saw that coming, with the Lions getting their second win against the Cardinals and really shutting down a Cardinals offense, which we think is quite explosive, despite the loss of DeAndre Hopkins at the moment. It just makes you wonder, when you look at it, at what happened with the Bucs, at what happened with the Cardinals, at even, frankly, what almost happened to the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor, I'm just going to ask you, I mean, when you sit here
and look at the Rams, the best team in the NFC? Maybe, but then we've seen what they've done against the Cardinals at one point.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, the Rams had a lull there. There was a 3-game stretch where the Rams were not very impressive. But I'll ask you just straight up, Taylor, you know, right now, if you had to say it, best team in the NFC at the moment? I mean, if the season were to end today and you just had to crown it, if this was like the old BCS where we had to just say this is the best team in football, who would you say it for the NFC? I'm not sure I have it at the moment.
I mean, if we had to choose, I would say Rams or Cardinals.
Pretty interesting. And of course, the Cardinals would have been no part of this conversation. And look, nobody's saying they're the best team in the NFC, but the Niners
know it's hard to go against the Bucs too. Right, I just think that they have like a really, there's something about the Saints and Brady. And I think this is just one of those games where, I mean, you could chalk it up to one of the bad games of the Rams. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is. I still might say, I mean, look, LaFleur is certainly a wizard in the regular season. You know, what he's been able to do back-to-back seasons is to be in the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. What he's done in his first two seasons with Rodgers is really impressive.
But the bigger story in that game is how well the Ravens played against the team that everyone considered to be the best team in the league.
That was.
With their backup quarterback, two corners. I mean, they just didn't have anybody.
And for the Packers to allow that also makes you question what's going on with them. And of course, on special teams, they didn't look good last week against Chicago.
Special teams has been a huge issue for the Packers.
Yes. There's clearly an Achilles heel there. And you know what? A team that we haven't even discussed for the NFC, and surprising, certainly for someone who is so adapted to Dak Prescott the way I am.
I know.
Are the Cowboys just Are the Cowboys just laying in the weeds? You know, because they don't have a divisional battle, which they just, they do not. I mean, there's just nobody sniffing them in the NFC East. And of course, they're undefeated in the division. And, you know, nobody's taking any of those other teams seriously in the NFC East. Because the Cowboys have that so wrapped up, and because Dak, it's really, their offense has not really been humming over the course of the last month. There was that ugly Thanksgiving loss to the Raiders in there. But the Cowboys are right where they want to be.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought
Cowboys
about them.
Cowboys are right where they want to be. And yes, yeah. I keep beating my
drum. And they've been able to stay healthy, too.
Exactly. And I keep talking about the Rams probably just because it was a preseason pick. You know, we saw the Rams as a team that could represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. But I'm going to say right now, I'm going to say the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC right now.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah, I'm going to say the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC. And you're right. Maybe it's something to do with health at the moment. And even this little chip on the shoulder that Zeke might have because Pollard is seemingly the guy that's going to be stealing carries. Or maybe Pollard is the number one running back there. And you still got to love what you get out of CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. And with Schultz making plays at tight end. And with Dak, you know, right now, maybe not exactly firing on all cylinders, but finding ways to win games and to make plays when it matters most. The Cowboys, that's a team that can beat anybody in the NFC. So I'm going to say it. I'm going to say right
I'm
now.
Go, probably, I'm going to build on your one more thought of taking the Cowboys. And I'm going to say in the AFC, I think that your original pick, I believe this was your pick, was the Colts. They're looking like the most complete team right now.
That was an incredible.
Was that your pick?
Incredible game. So my remember. pick for the Super Bowl, Taylor, was Buffalo. However,
it was Buffalo.
when we went through divisions, it was the Colts that I thought would win the South. I did not. I saw Tennessee just a rung below that, and I saw the Colts as the team that was going to. I just sort of maybe a soft spot in my heart that I wanted to see Carson do it. The Carson Wentz and Frank Wright connection. And I just thought,
well, Carson doesn't have to do with much when you've got Jonathan Taylor at the backfield.
Carson essentially did nothing on Saturday night. And frankly, look at what was able to happen. And Jonathan
Taylor, that defense is playing lights out, too.
Taylor could be up for MVP. You know, Taylor deserves MVP votes at the moment. But you're right about Indy. So that's an interesting one to say that Indy could be the best team in the AFC right now. And I'll say Cowboys the best in the NFC for sure. All right, Taylor, well, look, there's so much more. And frankly, you know, we're somewhere in between this week 14, 15 thing because of what's happening in the world. But there's going to be much more for us to discuss. All apologies for the slight hiccup in our very regular schedule here. But there will be
and
more.
And now Sam has a permanent get out of jail free card.
That's it. Maybe I'll use it. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll save it for something Levi related. You know, we're just gonna keep it in that back pocket, Taylor. But I cannot wait